Okay, well,
I'll see what the hell they are.
Okay, well, they say it's the exact same spot both times. They're out there, like I say that.
Oh, my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh, Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. All right,
Weezer,
are you ready for this?
I'm a cameraman, but what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? Was it perfectly circular? Yes.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that these days like this.
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light, struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Yes, these are Strange Days Indeed, and this program reflects the UFO side of the strangeness. Welcome to program number 379 in the current series. Tonight, Dave Frelott, a British correspondent and the publisher-editor of UFO Review, Stuart Miller. And in the second hour, some fascinating audio clips recorded by Michel Deschamps, the Mutual UFO Network's Sudbury section director. Interviews he did with Don Campbell, a local up there, who's had many amazing UFO-related experiences over the years. Some pretty interesting clippage that Victor Vigiani, who's in studio with me tonight, I will be playing for yous. Evening.
Good evening. Good evening. Once again, we launch ourselves into the ether to find out what's going on.
Oh, I wish I'd thought of that.
I just thought of it just now.
Yeah, you did.
It seemed like a pretty nice thing to say, because
it's,
we are.
Yeah, we certainly launch ourselves into the ether fairly regularly.
That's
here,
right.
Don't we?
It's always a pleasant trip.
It is. It's an amazing trip. And the feedback afterward is what's really interesting about it all. And speaking of which, I think the email is working tonight.
You've been on tenterhooks about that, haven't you, all week?
Well, it didn't work at all last week. So, you know, the regular guys who write me little missives. I was going to say little snotty messages. Snotty grams. Couldn't get through last week, which was equally frustrating for them and for me.
But you did eventually put it all together.
It just flowed. Dave Frelott was in last Saturday night. We had a good time together.
Good, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to say this a couple of times tonight. I've had a very trying week. The UFO Updates email list has lived since 1996 on one host. And it got to the point where the prices were getting ridiculous and there were much better deals out there. And I decided that I would make the move. I've moved a lot of various websites that I look after. Mm-hmm. Over the years, but I never actually moved the archive. Well, last weekend, the archive moved. Well, some of it moved.
Like moving his building, right?
Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, most of it went really smoothly, and the guys that supported the new host were really good. But for some reason, 1996, 97, and 98, although they're there at the new host, don't appear on the front page, and I haven't been able to figure it out. And it's been making me bananas.
Well, knowing you, it'll just drive you crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You want to get all the details exactly right.
Well, I'm an anal retentive Scorpio. What can I tell you? But, I want them there. They are there if you do a search for any of the, mm-hmm. you know, the archives that are sort of not easily apparent, right. They'll pop, but they don't show on the front page those 3 years. And Glenn Campbell, who wrote the original scripting for the archive, the Pearl, the CGI scripting, isn't able to help me. So if there's somebody out there who knows from CGI and who can help. SDI@virtuallystrange.net. Be grateful to hear from you and get that back up there. It's identical to what was at the old host.
And but it's just not working now.
It's not working now.
Wow.
It's totally bizarre. Yeah. So it's been kind of a stressful week, one way and another. You know?
Well, let's hope this week is a better one.
Yeah, and if somebody who knows that scripting emails me at sdi@virtuallystrange.net, SDI, Strange Days, indeed, @virtuallystrange.net, it'll make things perfect. And once I get rid of this cold that's making me feel like I'm walking around in a gin house, a cotton gin house somewhere.
Then you'll be better than perfect.
Oh, yeah, I'll be much better than perfect, and I'll just be the usually perfect anal retentive Scorpio once again. Oh, my. Some interesting stories. The UFO reports that are being put out nowadays just make me totally bananas, and I don't know why people are bothering. For example, this is from Fort St. John, British Columbia. It's been quiet up here of late, but when I went to take a photo of the sunset on February 1st, I noticed a couple of bright objects for a few seconds and managed to get a quick snapshot. It was around 5:30 p.m. I saw them moving, but only for about 5 seconds before they disappeared into low cloud cover. Yeah, and that's the report.
Not very specific.
No, not at all. And why bother gathering that kind of report, you know? And then not only not gathering it, but not passing it on to the investigators in the various provinces.
And
that's what I don't understand.
And to have it go through some sort of vetting process where you get some more information about who, what, when, why, mm-hmm. how, and all of the details that good investigations that usually yield.
Well, I know that Don Ledger out down east, our mm-hmm. East Coast correspondent, is tearing his hair out. There have been several things on his front doorstep. Chris Rakowski in Winnipeg, Manitoba, exactly the same thing. Several cases reported and not being passed on to them so that they can go investigate. Just so that they end up on somebody's website, you know, so that person can say, I've got them on my website.
I think the website or the internet has maybe in some ways done a disservice to reporting those kinds of things. We don't get the grassroots investigations that used to be done.
That used to be done. Well, because they're not, those reports, they're being gathered by, you know, half a dozen different websites, and they're not filtering down to the field, to where the investigators are, who are champing at the bit to get out there and do some investigation, a lot of them, you know? And they're not getting a lot of calls because people don't call anymore. They go on the web and say, well, where do I, oh, yeah, here's this site, And those sites don't have good reporting forms, and they don't pass them on.
I think people are being spoon-fed by the Internet. That's the problem.
Yeah.
There's no good investigation going on of any specific sighting. A lot of times, if I do get a call on our hotline, I do my best to follow up. And generally speaking, you know, you get all the information, you ask people to send a report in. And unfortunately, that's where it has to end. You can't do much more with it other than submit it to Chris. And it's not easy to get reports and do a lot with them, because people don't really I'm not sure what it is. They don't give you the specifics anymore.
You have to ask for them.
Yeah,
and
I've
had this discussion a couple of times with Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center when I said to him, you know, Matthew Didier and I designed an international UFO reporting form, and according to where you say you are, then that your report is forwarded to an investigator in that area. But it's a very comprehensive UFO reporting form.
Mm-hmm.
And Davenport's opinion and feeling is that people can't be bothered filling them in if they see a daunting, long UFO report form, then they're not going to fill it in.
Depends on how intense the sighting is.
Well, exactly.
You know,
but I mean, at least put it up there, because the kind of report that I just read is basically it's useless. Why bother reporting it other than for the woo-woo factor, you know?
Yeah.
Here with his take on it is Dave Furlock.
There's a thread on the UFO updates list that has been steadily raising my blood pressure the more I follow it. It's called Logic Explains Most UFO Sightings. And it emanates from an article in The Advertiser in Adelaide, South Australia. Professor Stephen Hughes of the Queensland University School of Physical and Chemical Sciences states that Most UFO phenomena could be explained with logic, and people aren't very familiar with what's in the sky, so when they see something they can't explain, they often jump to the conclusion that it's a UFO. He even goes on to explain that two of the numerous recent UFO sightings in Queensland can easily be explained because one was the planet Venus being unusually bright, and the other was simply aircraft vapor trails. Okay, I've just about had it with these idiots who have decided that all UFO reports are simply misidentified aircraft, or planets, or swamp gas, or flocks of pelicans, or any other stupid, illogical explanation that they can conveniently pull out of their nether regions. I am not a trained observer of aerial objects, but my sight is relatively good, and either during the day or at night, I do watch the skies. I would love to see a UFO that I could identify as some kind of alien technology, but as of right now, I have not seen one. I have seen an object in the sky that I could not identify as anything other than some kind of moving light, but I did not immediately jump to the conclusion that it was some kind of piloted vehicle or anything of the sort. The part of Dr. Hughes's interview that I enjoyed the most is when he stated that while people did see things in the sky, in most cases they were aircraft, satellites, and meteors. Now, I don't care if it's the latest version of the latest black operation aircraft under development by any number of top secret research labs. If it's an aircraft that has been developed by humans, I will identify it as an aircraft and not some strange spacecraft from another planet. If it flies and we humans have developed it, I can and will recognize it as such. As for satellites, likewise. If it's in orbit above this planet and travels a route that does not waver, I will firstly consider it as something that we placed in orbit. If it starts darting around the sky like some kind of freaked out hummingbird, trust me, it is something other than a satellite. As for meteors, I have had the pleasure of seeing a very beautiful meteor come to Earth one night on a drive home from Ottawa. It came down in a farmer's field just south of Highway 7, and when it disintegrated, it gave off a very beautiful purple color. Now, did I immediately pull off the road and call the number to report a UFO sighting? No, of course not. I simply identified what I saw and continued on my drive home. I said it once before and I'll say it again. There are some idiots out there that think we're all a bunch of children and that we panic when we see something in the sky that we can't immediately identify. If they bother to check, some of these reports of UFO sightings come from some people that are qualified to give reports because they are trained observers. Like the report that comes from a gentleman who's an aircraft designer by trade, and because of that, he has to be familiar with anything that flies around in the sky. Or the reports that come to us from astronauts of things they have seen in space. Or the reports from pilots whose very lives depend on how observant they are of things in the sky with them. Now, I'm not saying that all reports of UFO sightings are of craft from another world, because that would be a very, very stupid statement to make. Almost as stupid as saying most UFO phenomena could be explained with logic, and people aren't very familiar with what's in the sky, so when they see something they can't explain, they often jump to the conclusion that it's a UFO. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
Hey, I knew, I had a feeling that the professor in Queensland would raise a little ire when I posted that one, and I thought, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what comes of this one, and it made it all the way to radio.
Well, what can you say? It's just one of those things. It's, you know, I've had enough with some of this kind of stuff, the silliness. I mean, like I said, I mentioned it once before, you know, my daughter, when she was growing up, when she was 4 years old, you know, she'd look up in the sky and go, hey, you know, there's a flock of birds. When she got to be about five, she looked up and go, look, flock of geese. Actually, she said a gaggle of geese. So, you know, when these guys turn around and say, oh, well, you know, you're not used to seeing what's in the sky, therefore, that's what it was. Yeah, right.
The problem is with profs and scientists is that they shoot their mouths off and they have no idea what they're talking about. They have no idea what it is that people have seen. They have no idea who the people are that have seen the things that they have no idea what they've seen.
Oh yeah,
and so it goes, you know. And they may be very, very bright in their own field, but put one foot outside and they ain't so clever, you know.
Well, one of my favorites is the fact that, you know, you have a very well-noted astronomer turning around and going, well, I don't believe in UFOs because there's never been any reports of UFOs by any astronomers.
Well, nonsense.
And bottom line is you look at it and you go, what about the report by this astronomer and that astronomer and this astronomer over here?
Yeah, there's going to be a group of them this March the 10th, Dave, at York University, discussing the psychological aspects of the...
Oh, is that James Alcock?
That's correct, at York University.
That's at U of T, yeah.
U of T, or is it York?
U of T, yeah, okay. In the Mississauga room in somewhere or other.
That's right. They're going to be, as a group of astronomers, they're going to be discussing how the psychological aspects of seeing things in the sky are attributed to calling them UFOs rather than, in fact, being something we don't understand. So another alternate expression of ignorance.
Well, I think the good doctor, her professor, Alcock, is talking through his nether regions.
Once again,
yes. Yes. You know, you know, the man is a member of PsyCop. I seriously think that he hasn't read any of the academic works that have been written around the phenomena of UFOs and published by Kansas University Press, edited by Dr. David Jacobs, several years ago now. And I think before anybody shoots their mouths off about UFOs, academics, they should be made to read this book. Go read this book, then go and think about it, and keep your damn mouth shut till you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
No?
You can do that with UFOs,
though. Do I sound irritated?
You've had a stressful week.
Yeah. Dave, thank you. I'm going to sit here and explode very loudly shortly. We'll talk to you next week, Dave.
For sure.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night, guys.
Oh, man. Oh, just hair trigger tonight. Hair trigger, Victor.
Yeah, okay.
Let's make our way across the pond. Transatlantic time over to Cheshire in northwestern United Kingdom. Therein lives the publisher, editor, chief cook and bottle washer of UFO Review, Stuart Miller, a regular monthly contributor to this program, joins us. Good evening, Monsieur Miller.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How you are, sir?
Tired.
Yeah, me too. I bet you are.
Very trepidatious.
Are you really?
Well, the mood you're in. Oh. I one word, Errol, and...
You were listening.
I was listening. I was actually listening with a very great deal of interest, because you actually brought up in conversation, but, well, both Dave Filotti's take and what you were saying about scientists are... certainly what you said about scientists was something I wanted to talk about as well, actually.
Ah! Oh, I hope I didn't realize.
No, you didn't.
I hope I haven't thwarted anything or preempted anything that you feel you might want to say.
Not at all, no.
Oh, good.
You can only add to a conversation.
Hot flushes now.
So what is your perspective on scientists?
Yes.
Well, my train of thought was... prompted by another thread on updates that is bubbling away. And that was a response to the interview published with Jacques Vallée. And a couple of people, Dick Hall being one of them, came on and sort of offered fairly strong negative opinions about it. The implication being that Vallée has now descended into mysticism, and that although Dick Hall didn't actually say it, it's never really very far from his thoughts, as one knows over the years. The only true salvation for ufology is science.
Mm.
Now, Errol, 5 minutes ago you said scientists are always shooting their mouths off.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you if you are one of those people that believes that science is the answer, because the more I think about it, the less convinced I am about that.
No, not at all. I have never felt that science was the answer. Science might help along with a lot of other fields of endeavor to put the pieces together. But science obviously will never be the answer by itself. It's too damn blinkered and too concerned with its tenure and where the next funding bucks are coming from to be in any way involved with what interests all of us.
Good grief, that's a very strong statement.
Well, yeah. You're taking me there again, aren't you?
Well, I agree with pretty much every word you said.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think of this passion, and I'm actually going to use the word belief on the part of many ufologists, that if only science would take notice and dig in properly, then everything will be all right in the world? Do you actually believe that, because I do, that it's actually that belief in the potential salvation from science is actually a religious conviction?
Yes. I think, as I said a few moments ago, there are many roads that lead to Rome, is basically what I was saying, and science is one of those. Maybe it's a back road, maybe not, but, you know, we in this modern day society put so much credence and belief into science and scientists that, I think unless there are certain scientists who become involved in this field and who choose voluntarily to dedicate some of their time and somebody puts up the money for it to look into it, I think unless that happens, it's going to be a cold day in hell, you know, before we get any sort of resolution. Now I've come down on both sides of the fence.
Well, I unless one is a fervent proponent of the extraterrestrial hypothesis, and or rather a dimensional solution to the UFO problem, I don't think beyond those two points science has any real worth. I mean, obviously, dimensional, if one goes along the dimensional path, obviously that's string theory and so on and so forth, and obviously that's science, but it is only theory. If you believe in the ETH, then it's nuts and bolts, and yes, maybe science can help there, but then you're left, if you take those two away, you're left with the paranormal, effectively. And science has played around with the paranormal in the past and hasn't really been very positive about it.
Yeah, but it's, I think, the paranormal is there, you know. I mean, it's been given a label. There's something going on that we don't understand. It's beyond our normal ken. And when you... I'm going to talk myself around in circles here, Stuart.
Okay. I just want to say that I think that Jacques Vallée, I respect his views enormously. I'm not sure I quite agree 100% with him, but I certainly think he might well be along the right lines.
I think that Victor kind of agrees with you, too, and agrees with Vallée in a lot of things, as I do. You know, there is more here than meets the eye.
Yes.
I think we have to come to the agreement that regardless of how you look at the phenomenon that we talk about, one has to admit, regardless if you're a scientist or if you're a psychiatrist or if you're a man on the street, something very, very bizarre is going on in the skies.
Mm.
Okay? Fact of the matter. And then you have to decide how you're going to look at that.
Victor, can I just say, not just in the skies, I think down here on this planet as well.
Well, wherever. I mean, I'm saying that we've got a phenomenon going on. That's what I'm alluding to, be it planetary or be it in the skies. And I guess we can get to that after we hear some music.
Oh, well, you could have, after we hear some music. Yeah, the music of the cash register ringing, Victor.
As always.
Yes. Stuart Miller, a regular contributor to this program, publishes UFO Review. Go take a look at UFO Review. The January-February issue is out there online at the moment, and that's UFOReview.net. Download yourself either a PDF version or a Word doc version. Pictures, cartoons, interesting interviews with all kinds of interesting people. And boy, big, fat digital issue, the January-February. I think we've sort of stirred up a hornet's nest here.
I want to stir up another one.
Stuart Furlott called back.
Oh, dear.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, guys. No, it, just in regards to the whole science issue. Science tends to be a religion, okay, nowadays, because it's a belief system. We believe in science, and many times it's been proven wrong in a lot of its instances. The problem with science and UFOs is that science takes a hypothesis and then turns around and tries to develop a theory to prove it or disprove it. The hypothesis with UFOs, as far as science is concerned, is that they don't exist. And that's the problem.
That's exactly my perception, David. My take is that science is a way of arranging reality for us. It's a very convenient way of arranging reality. And back in the days of Galileo, he messed up that arrangement and got put in house arrest for years and years for doing it. And we continue to do that with the UFO phenomenon. It completely smashes our reality to bits. There's no room in science for UFOs. Now, once science does decide to take it seriously and look at it in a more specific and dynamic manner, it may come to grips with the fact that this may in part be part of our reality. But until it does that, UFOs has no place in science. And in a big way, thank goodness.
There. Response, Stuart Miller?
I don't think, just commenting on what Victor just said there, I don't think that science will ever go there, because if it does, it will, and is successful, it will upend reality. And that's science down the tubes, physics down the tubes. It just can't afford to go there and go there properly because of what it will discover.
Yeah. Dave, thank you for calling back.
Hey, no problem. I'm listening.
I'm good to know you are. Good night, Dave.
Good night, guys.
Good night. Let's see. That one there. Noisy phone line Dave has. Mm. So where else did you want to go tonight, Stuart Miller?
I wanted to stick with Jacques Vallée for just another moment or
of
two.
Of course.
Because... again, another side thread that's kicked off as a result of this interview that appeared on the updates board during the week. Gildas Bourdais has made the comment that Vallée has a new novel out, and he briefly explained that he wasn't very happy with it. Gildas has actually done a review of the book at some considerable length in French.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I think he might have mentioned that in his...
he also alluded to the fact that that Vallée agrees with Nick Redfern's book, Body Snatchers in the Desert, about the genesis of the Roswell crash.
Well, yes, indeed, and that's why I brought the subject up, because Gildas takes... a novel, not a factually based document, and criticizes it, even though it's all made up, because Jacques Vallée does indeed confirm, or he certainly puts Nick's theory within the book. And he really tears Vallée apart for that. It's a very long review.
Mm.
But the point is... It's one thing criticizing a factual document. You can offer a literal or literary criticism of a novel.
Yes.
But bearing in mind that it is a novel, and therefore, Gildas, it's not real, to criticize the factual parts of it simply because it's confirms or proposes or condones, rather, a theory that has been suggested elsewhere, about which Gildas is extremely sensitive.
Yes.
I think it's taking things a bit too far.
Mm-hmm.
But
then, like Clouseau, sometimes those Frenchmen tend to do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's interesting, based on the synopsis that Gildas has published in the novel, it sounds like it's quite interesting, and I wonder if it will get published in English.
Mm.
And it seems that Vallée is just very partly in bits, based it on his, there are some autobiographical elements in it, it would appear.
Ah.
Which makes it a little bit more interesting.
Well, I hope it's translated into English, and are you cracking a whip over there, Victor? Is that what you're doing?
I just have an idea.
Huh?
What I'm going to suggest is one of the reasons why science may be staying away from this, I mean, we're going back to the other part of our discussion, is if they were to become deeply involved in this, okay, and they were, science in general, or any group of scientists, or an enclave of them, or a conference, if they were to find out, get some fact or some aspect of the UFO phenomenon and prove it to be true,
mm-hmm.
What would happen next? How would society respond to the fact that a group of respected scientists may, in fact, take a piece of ufology or history of it, or even a current fact that's involved, for example, crop circles or something else along that way, landing sites, trace evidence that, in fact, proves that this phenomenon is, in fact, something that is part of our reality, that it is true. Where would we go from there? And then after that, would a cascade of facts lead to the conclusion that we are being visited by extraterrestrial civilizations, then, for all intents and purposes, can move at or beyond light speed or move from one dimension to another? That's the cascade of information that may come from the believability or the affirmation of one single fact. Facts are like that.
Can I respond to that, Victor? I think science will be responsible for eventually confirming the existence of extraterrestrial life, but I don't think it will be responsible for it in the manner in which you are possibly suggesting.
Hmm.
I think it's going to come from the space stroke astronomical side of science, and in fact, it's happening right now. Right under our noses, there was, and this is the way it's going to happen. There's not going to be some grand announcement by the president or something like that. There is going to be, finally, an announcement that there is life on Mars, and that is different. I mean, during the week, you may have seen a news item about how a couple of British scientists, including the gentleman who was responsible for our great failure to land a thing on Mars a couple
Beagle,
of years ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Got a chance to look at another meteorite, quite an old one, actually, I think from 1911.
Uh-huh.
They got a chance to look at it just very recently and have said, well, hold on, you know, there are carbon deposits within this which we think indicate the possibility of life on Mars.
And the rover Spirit, who's mm-hmm. ended up at what they call home plate.
Yes.
And I noticed space.com in the last couple of days has been saying the NASA guys are scratching their heads about what they're seeing at home plate.
Yeah.
Welcome to the head scratching club, guys.
I think it's going to be that way, Victor. It's going to sort of come in through the back door, if you know.
I see what you're saying. I just suggested an enclave of scientists gathering together to ponder some fact. But I agree with you that once a factoid, that's a kind of a neat little word that's come up lately in our lexicon. Once a fact comes about that will lead to others, where you get a whole web of facts coming out. And then once you get one, the deniability of others, you will not be able to stand on them. You must go further with those facts. And I think Mars is a very good example.
Yes, indeed.
There, indeed. Did you cover the ground you needed to, Stuart Miller?
Yes. You were complaining right at the very beginning of the first complaint tonight, Errol, was about the poor quality of UFO reports.
Yes.
And there was an article published during the week, which I'll have to come to next month, about what to do if you see a UFO.
Ah.
Well, I'll tell you the very first point is...
Yes.
Remain calm.
Don't panic in large red friendly warm letters on right on the front of the Encyclopedia Galactica or the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, whichever you prefer. Thank you, Douglas. We do miss you. Stuart Miller, thank you, sir.
Our pleasure.
We'll talk to you in a month again.
Indeed.
Go to bed, sleep tight.
I will. All the best to you both, Jim.
Good night.
Take care.
Good night. And the man who's been waiting very patiently for the last little while is Alex here in downtown Toronto. Let's bring Alex on. Alex, good evening.
Good evening, Errol.
Thank you for hanging in.
Oh, no problem. You're worth it. I just had 2 points to make really quickly.
Yes.
One, am I the only one who's noticed that the upper echelon of PsyCop, a lot of them are tenured people who rely an awful lot on government grants to keep their regular full-time day jobs going?
Oh, yeah. And a lot of them are on the payroll at PsyCop, and a lot of the PsyCop members are encouraged leave the lots of money when they pass to the organization.
Exactly,
and,
right.
You know, and I actually had Joe Nickel on this program one day who said, investigation is our middle name.
You can tailor an investigation any way you want, sadly. And the other thing I wanted to make mention of is, why is it when it comes to the parasciences, and by that I mean ufology, study of demons, whatever, that sort of stuff, why is it that's the only time when so-called or alleged hard scientists will go with the preposition that absence of proof is proof of absence? Whereas with anything else, if you said that to them, they'd start screaming to the rafters that you're wrong.
Yeah. Well, why is that? I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah, I think it's basically it goes back to, people think I'm paranoid. But, just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean no one's out to get me. But, I think there's an agenda there. I really do. I think that, there is some vested interests who don't want us to know the whole story. And if you get credible people or people who presume and people believe to be credible and have them come out and just naysay everything, then most of the lumpen proletariat will go along with them.
Yeah, and Victor and I were talking about that very thing.
Precisely.
During the news, and came up with a couple of points. One was that one of the things that we really need to do is put a PhD course together, and I suggested that Kevin Randall, Stanton T. Friedman, and Jerome Clark, and perhaps even Richard Hall could put a UFO course together in the sociology department of one of the big universities, and let's have some PhDs out there in the field of ufology.
That's great, and if you could add Richard Hoagland to them, then you'd have a really kick-butt faculty.
Okay.
Now just to put together a syllabus of some kind of information that can be dealt with as a curriculum.
Well, where do I sign up?
Start by reading from message number 1 at the UFO Updates Archive. And when you've read all 64,000, then we'll give you a PhD.
All right, I'll call you back after that. Have a good night, guys.
You too, Alex.
Good night.
Bye.
Good night. See, people like Alex have the right idea. You know, they're asking the right questions.
They're proactive thinkers.
Yes.
And I think part of the problem is most people are just so busy with life, to concede an amount of time during the day or even whenever to read a book or to examine this particular issue because they've been told by science that it is not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've been told something by science, you believe it because science has told us a whole lot of things that are verifiable, and we know that the sun rises in the morning and it sets in the evening, and
we
everything
need science to tell us that.
Well, of course, we can observe that with the naked eye.
Mm. Well, and a lot of people have observed what we talk about in this program every Saturday night with the naked eye.
Yeah. bring that to a court of law, and you've got a totally different situation. And that's it's the really unfortunate part about what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to bring Michel Deschamps, who's the Mutual UFO Network's Sudbury Section Director, into the program at this point, because Michel has a friend up there in Sudbury named Don Campbell, UFO Don, as Michel calls him. And Don Campbell has, for many, many years, been interested in UFOs, and Michel spent quite a while interviewing him, and Michel, when he came down for the Toronto conference back in September, stayed at our house, and he dropped me off a couple of CDs, which I finally got around to listening to in the midst of everything else this past week. And there's some interesting stuff there, and we potentially have, I don't know, five or six clips to play tonight. Michel, good evening.
Good evening, guys.
Once again, thank you for the discs. It's fascinating stuff, and nice clean recordings, too.
Yeah. Really, really clean recording, and he's one of the best witnesses I've interviewed. And it's important to note too that this guy, when he married in 1953, he was not a believer. He actually would laugh at some of the write-ups in the Sudbury Star at that time.
Yeah.
It's only until 1966, 67, when the whole world was going through a massive wave of sightings, Sudbury was having its fair share.
Yeah. And the first clip I want to play, Michel, is Don explaining how he got involved with UFOs. This is Don Campbell talking about 1966, as Michel says.
I'm Don Campbell, former welder of 25 years at Inco, then a supervisor from 75 to 78, and then 78 a teacher. I was made head foreman beginning in 82. And held that position until 1985 when I left in November. One of the reasons I got interested in UFOs was in 1966 I was at my residence, happened to come home this night from 4 to 12 as I did many times in the evening, like sitting out on the porch, and happened to look out. It was in a westerly direction I was looking out this particular night, and I seen what I thought was a very, very bright star in the sky, and I thought I was confusing it with Venus. But Venus shouldn't have been in the west at that time. It should have been, moreover, northeasterly at that particular time of year. So I remember going in and getting my 8x35 binoculars and looking at it and thinking, gee, that's strange. Green, red, green, red, green, red. So I called my wife out and I says, take a look at this over here. She says, oh, yeah. She says, that plane, it's got a green and red light on. It's changing. I says, yeah, but it's sitting there like a helicopter. That's very strange. I listened and listened, no sound, and then it seemed to come down with a very unusual movement out of the sky. Can't describe it on a tape, but I'm looking at it, and all of a sudden, it just seemed to come down out of the sky, and it was about 10 miles closer to my eyes. You know, just a quick drop. A plane doesn't move like that. It comes, you know, like a long directional, and it was there, and it stopped. When I focused in on it, and I said, boy, oh boy, now I know, that's no plane. Because here was this red light, green light flashing from end to end, like a traditional plane would, coming in for landing, but there it was sitting like a helicopter, absolutely no sound. And then all of a sudden, the red light went out, the green light went out, and just a bright glow, almost looked like a halogen, white fluorescent light, and it just sped right off, straight up into the sky, you know, at an angle, about a 45 degree angle, and disappeared, all within 3-4 seconds from the time the red and green went out, and I said, that does it. I have just witnessed my first phenomenon in the sky, a UFO, and my heart was pounding and I was all excited, and I start watching the skies more. I didn't get too excited that year because I didn't really see that much more in that particular year. I think one other time, which it might have been or might have not been, it was too far of a distance.
Don Campbell, whom we're featuring this hour, as recorded by Michel Deschamps up there in Sudbury. Don talking about an experience in 1966. You know, Victor, I remember years ago there was a talk show host up on the old CFGM up in Richmond Hill,
yeah.
Ron Knight. He was on air one night talking about UFOs. And somebody called and said, I suggest you don't talk about this subject because you never know what's going to happen. and suddenly the phones burned out. Stuff went haywire in their control room, and the station went off the air. And it was never, they could never explain what had happened to the technology.
Isn't that something?
And I tried in the, over the years that we've been doing this program here.
To find out why or how?
To try and get a hold of Ron Knight and have him on, and but he just seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah, and there were a couple of guys, one of whom I'm still in touch with, who were operators at that station at that time, you know, like Big Daddy out there in Master. They were doing the same thing for Ron Knight. And they had some pretty hairy stories to tell about what went down at that radio station that night. And the reason that I bring that up is that Michel, in his discussions with Don Campbell, came across a story about a TV station up there in Sudbury. Eh, Michel?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it was a radio station, I believe, if you're referring to the...
The Super Tower.
Yeah.
What was it, CKSO, the TV station up there?
Well, it was CKSO. It was CKSO at that time.
Yeah.
And his residence was actually pretty neat. His residence at the time actually was on a neighboring hill. Like, it's, of course, you know, Sudbury is like mining town, nickel capital of the world, and very, very rocky. And from his backyard, which he took me once, after he's actually moved away from there.
You could see
and
the tower.
He actually looked down to where the old radio station was with the cement platform in the back.
Well, let's hear Don Campbell describe that, shall we?
Yeah.
This is, 1967, I think, now.
I come home off of 4 to 12, and I'm having a cup of coffee, and I come back out on the railing. My wife comes out and says, "My favorite Western just went off the air." It was black and white at that time. Can't do anything about it. I come back out and I'm looking northwest at the tower, and I see this extra red light on top of the tower, and that is a big light, a big red on and off light, not the little one that used to flash on the tower, but a big light. And I get my binoculars out and I say, "Well, my God, we've got a UFO hovering over." So I go in and I'm leafing through the yellow pages, CKSO, da da da. I'm all excited, you know, when you see something like this. I know why they're off the air, and I phone, and I get somebody on there, and I say, "This is Don Campbell. These people are off the air." And they said, "Well, don't tell us anything we don't know. This is the 15th or 20th call. We know we're off the air. We got our technicians running all over. We're going to get back in the air as soon as we find our problem." I said, "Your problem is right over your super tower. You've got a UFO, and it's sitting right over your super tower, and that's why you're off the air." They said, "You're kidding." I said, "No. I'm on the next hill just down from you. I break out in the backyard. I got a perfect view from the front, from the back of my house. I'm looking at it. Can we have your phone number, sir?" And I said, "You sure can. We'll get right back to you. We've got to get some pictures of this." So, hang up. I run out. It's still there. They're still off. Then I go up to the top of my backyard, and I look over my binoculars, and they're wheeling their big cameras out on their cement pad, and they're taking pictures of the same thing that I'm looking at. The only thing is, they've got a $55,000 camera, which has got good night vision, and they're getting some pretty excellent pictures of this thing blinking over. Like, if I had a camcorder like I have today, I would have been having beautiful pictures. 5-10 minutes goes by, ding, ding-a-ling-ling, my wife said, "It's for you." He said, "Thank you very, very much. We've got some fantastic pictures. We're going to show them tomorrow morning over the network in Sudbury." Which they did. They got on the air at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, and some of the viewers did get a picture of this, what they called a UFO, and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police got in touch with them very shortly, same morning, said, "Get that off the air," and they apologized for what they had shown on the air at that time. They said it was dewdrops on their lens, which was giving them a false impression of the red light on top of their tower, and was reflecting, giving a much larger image of what they'd seen, and it wasn't a UFO overall, and this is the story they had to give to the public. An apology after they'd shown the film and got everybody excited. They apologize. Meanwhile, their people say, "You keep quiet about this," but one of their staff had told the CHNO, and CKSO told CHNO, "We've already been warned by the Mounties," and it was the CHNO that took it from there. They're the ones that phoned me from their radio station and said, "Don Campbell, we heard what happened last night," and they said, "We'd like to interview you. Do you mind if we turn on a tape recorder?" And I said, "By all means." So I heard beep, and they said, "You're on." So I told him the exact story of what had happened. So I was all excited. I turned on my big Sony tape recorder, reel to reel. Of a 15-minute newscast, I was on for 8 or 9 minutes. Here is one station denying that the pictures they took and showed on the air was not a UFO. I watched it right till it flew away, and when it flew away, CKSO had no more problem with their transmitting of their pictures. Everything came back to life. I got a call from the Mounties after about that. I was told to keep off the air. I was also told to keep my mouth shut, that they have ways and means. They said, you shouldn't go on the air with stories like that. You haven't got our permission. It's all right to talk to fellow workers about it. You're not to go public on the air, and we'll be watching you from now on. And I said, who are you? And they identified themselves, and they said, we're the RCMP. We're in the downtown offices. We monitor all television and radio broadcasts. Somebody sits in a room, and everything that's on the air in the local district, they've got it. It's on tape, and it didn't take them long to catch up with me. Never did shut me up. They never did. I still kept talking to my buddies. I was on the air once more after that, and I kept broadcasting to all my friends, you want to see UFOs? Just come up with me in the new Sudbury or here or there. And, of course, the Sudbury Star was not afraid to put it on front page news.
Yeah, I bet they weren't. Interesting story, huh?
Very.
Very.
He's a really nice man. He says, I've had some of my friends listen to the tapes, and they say, man, the stories are just unbelievable. But he said, once you sit down with a witness like that, and you really get to get the feel of the man, you know that he's straight up.
Yeah.
You know that this guy is going down, well, I don't know, locally, I guess maybe, they don't mention it so much, because he's going down in history as being only one of two men to have the highest number of tickets for welding. Now, back in the day, they would train like very few people to be able to weld as many different types of metals and alloys as they could. Nowadays, they'll train like 25 guys to maybe learn two different metals. Him and another man who's now been deceased were the only two that actually held, between the two of them, 22 tickets.
Wow.
So this guy's a master welder.
One of the best welders in the business, working with Inco up there, who has been fascinated by UFOs since his first sighting in 1966. We heard Don Campbell telling us about the night that the local TV station up there in Sudbury got blowed off the air by a UFO that was hovering over its transmission tower. And the stories become progressively more interesting as time goes by, eh, Michelle?
Oh, yes, to say the least.
To say the least. This is actually, I think, the second part of that that TV station story. This is Don Campbell. I think this is 1967 also.
When I got interviewed because of the cutoff of the picture from over the CKSO Super Tower, other people got a hold of it, including our Air Force base out here, and I was invited out by a captain when I have time to come out when I'm on the right shift and tell them who I am at the gate, and invited me in, all within the same week of me getting on the radio. So I get out there and I get shown through the gate by a sergeant, and I get in, and there's a nice looking man about 45 years old, captain, and he invites me to sit down, and I sit down at the desk and I relate some of the things I've been doing and following up with UFO stories and things and staying out in the middle of the night. And he says, you believe in UFOs? And I said, oh, by all means. I said, I've seen enough. And he says, well, we do too. He says, denied generally by the press and by the government. He says, we're told to do this, he says, because of public panic. He says, that's as far as I can tell you. We know they're there. We've been tracking them with radar for many years. We don't know where they're from any more than you do. He says, that's about all I can tell you at this point in time. He says, it's too bad you're just a civilian. I didn't know what he was getting at the time. But he reached into his desk drawer and took out a beautiful picture. It was a blown up 35 millimeter picture. It looked like about 7x9. Nice picture. And he said, you know what these are? And this was an aerial view. And I said, well, I said, it looks like three discs. I could see that they're silver and that they had these glazed sort of a colored center button part, you know, looking down on them. He said, well, we had three jets that were coming in for a landing from about 5 miles high at North Bay just a couple of weeks ago. And he says they reported down to base that as they were coming in, here was these three UFOs sitting right over the North Bay base. and this isn't the first time they have, seem to have an interest in it. He says, so one of them turned on his nose camera and took movies, and this is a, one of the better shots from a long string of frames. And here was a beautiful picture of three UFOs, and he says, this, I can't elaborate or go and tell you too much, he said, except this is a picture just taken a couple of weeks ago, three UFOs over our base, looking down at our Air Force base, and he says the Americans have set up a system there that we had missiles for the defense of Canada. They were American-armed, Canadian-manned. A lot of people don't know that, but we had a missile base down at the North Bay base. This wasn't real public knowledge for quite a few years, except when it come to the point where it was going to be closed down. NORAD, safety defense system, and then they were going to dismantle. But we had a base in North Bay that would actually open up and fire rockets out. This was a part of our defense against Russia. And that's why the UFOs, I imagine, were interested in flying over this base and studying the setup there, as they would be on any earthbound type of thing. So this is another experience I've had in my life, talking to a real captain, seeing a real picture pulled out from a drawer and saying, this is not public knowledge, but it's Air Force knowledge that UFOs do exist. We've been tracking them since 43, 44. Right after the first atomic bomb experiment went off in the world, UFO activity picked up. He did tell me that much. And they were told by the government at that time, well, it's okay to talk about this yourselves, but not to the general public. Not to say you've seen silver discs flying with no wings and no vapor trail or anything. So this was all kind of hush-hush.
I bet it was.
Amazing information.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of it people hadn't heard before.
Yeah, and well, this is the famous Falcon Bridge radar base where
yes.
he was taken at that he got invited to go out to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the famous incident of 1975.
Right.
How long ago, Michel, did you do this interview with him?
The first CD was actually done in 91, and the other one was done in 93.
Mm.
Yeah.
So this stuff is all from the 91 recordings that you did, what, 15 years ago now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is Don in good health?
Yes, he is so far.
Uh-huh.
Funny story that's happened, which I don't know what to say about it. He sort of took a little, he was retired,
uh-huh.
and now he works at a local police station in Copper Cliff just taking phone calls about accidents and stuff like that.
Right.
And I think he got in there inadvertently because of his UFO interest. Now, whether or not somebody is keeping an eye on him or whatever, but he took it as, you know, it's a little something to do on the side, you know. So
yeah.
he enjoys it, you know. So whether or not somebody pushed a button somewhere to have him be employed as, you know, volunteer or whatever, I don't know. But he's in perfect health and... you know, as just I there's a few other places I want him to show me. He remembers the location of a landing that took place in 1954, at the time that he was a skeptic,
uh-huh.
At the Garson Mine, where three 13-foot-tall beings actually were seen by a local man that was walking to work that morning.
Three 13-foot-tall beings.
Yeah, with a landed craft. And apparently what Don, at the time, being skeptical and all, he still went out there, and he saw a military, U.S. military helicopter, twin propeller, with a big white star on the side, and they had people with earmuffs and Geiger counters checking the soil.
Hmm.
And then a week later, he went back with another friend of his, and everything was taken down and made to look as if nothing had ever happened. And yet the article about the landing, you know, is in like front page.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, July 6, 1954.
July 6, 1954, three 13-foot-tall beings. I think we have time maybe for one more, Michel. Maybe we can squeeze two. I don't know.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and play the next clip. This is Donald Campbell again up in Sudbury.
Five UFOs did a bird dance at the end of Burton Avenue where the dump, they came over the dump at 2 o'clock in the morning. The provincial police, the city police, and 15, 20 cars were up there on a beautiful summer evening watching five UFOs on a summer evening doing some of the most magical things that airplanes can't do. And people were radioing back and forth. and watching this, provincial police, city police, tuned into each other's frequency and saying, wow, come and see this. And cruisers are coming from the highway. And the Subway Star put that right on the front page of the paper the next day. You know, five UFOs and jets scramble in Flint, Michigan. The Americans, not Canadians, Americans. And they fly over to Sudbury, New Sudbury, and as they're heading over, they're about 20 miles out, the UFOs all pack up. And they're all gone. And the jets make a couple of circles. They don't go 20,000 miles an hour, but the UFOs do. UFOs left. They head back to Flint, Michigan, and they land. Headlines next day. Five or six jets scramble from Flint, Michigan, because there's five UFOs doing a circular dance and aerobatics over the dump. That was a dump site over Burton Avenue. That it is. It's no longer. It's all filled in with homes. And the provincial police reported, the city police reported, the Subway Star put it on the front page. There was no denying now, with so many 15, 20 cars, witnesses to this incident that night, it made the headlines the next day. And I thought, well, RCMP are going to say, don't you dare put that in the paper. Don't ask me why. They allowed it. It made the headlines. Five jet scramble. Then the next day, a little write-up in the corner on the front page saying they had made a mistake. All this hullabaloo and everything, it was some kind of peace shields that were falling from a satellite and were causing all sparkles in the sky. And again, the old cover-up. The jets had scrambled for nothing, that there really wasn't UFOs, it was pieces and debris that were falling and tumbling from the night sky, flashing in the sky in different areas, which had caused all this phenomenon that everybody was excited about, and the jets didn't have to scramble at all. It was from an earlier orbiting satellite, was the excuse that was given a day or two later in the paper. Of course, again, the RCMP and Ottawa Research Center saying, you have to get this story and calm it down. Too many phone calls, too many people all excited about UFOs over Sudbury, and they just debunked the story as really there was nothing to it. And yet this exhibition lasted over an hour and a half that evening, long enough for the jets to get radar warnings, scramble from Flint, Michigan, fly over at 600 miles an hour and get here, and the show was still going on. Enough for five provincial police cars and seven city cruisers and 14 constables to all be watching it and saying, wow, is that ever fantastic, as they would loop and turn this way and that way with their flashing red lights, you know. And I wasn't one of the lucky ones. Where was I that night? I was sound asleep in bed. That was one of the nights that I didn't know all this was going on, this particular dump night. I wasn't the lucky guy to be up on that hill. But when I went bowling that week, which was on a Wednesday, Sergeant Colton and Sergeant Lightfoot, that's all they could talk about between the lines of bowling, especially Lightfoot. He wasn't there that night either. He was a steady day sergeant. But his men brought in reports that were pages long, you know, of write-ups, official file. And about a week later, they were all stamped top secret, top secret, top secret, into the dead files. You know, this was not to be mixed in with their day-to-day reportings. Because RCMP, I guess, went down and said, you police that are involved in eyesights, this is not to be in your standard files. So they pulled them out, and those reports were just tucked away. Handwritten, signed by each man in the cruiser and their co-officer, two to a cruiser, that all seen it, witnessed it, wrote up the reports as what each one thought they saw. You know, these two wrote up a report, and these two wrote up a report, and everybody that was there wrote up the reports. But when all the reports were in, they went into the dead letter file, and God only knows if somebody from Ottawa didn't come later on, I'm only speculating, pull them out of the file and just said, it never happened. You know, it never happened, because what you were watching was debris mixing out of the sky, flashing. So God only knows. That's another one of the interesting stories that happened over Sudbury. And I mean, anybody can look in a 67 Sudbury Star in the summer, and that was front page news. Jets, you know, fly from Flint, Michigan to see UFOs over the city street, and that was a very interesting happening. Not made up on my part, actually reported right in the paper from polices and constables and 15 car witnesses, people that were out late that night, you know, traveling the Froude Road as a shortcut. The new Sudbury stopped their cars, got out, and all these cop cars there and watched it with their own eyes. They were all excited, and I guess they were all contacted. Keep your mouth shut, too. God only knows.
God only does.
He said that a couple of times, didn't he?
Yeah.
Amazing stuff. Right on your doorstep, Michel Deschamps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's the one who actually instigated the fact that I should be looking in the Sudbury Star for clippings. And I kind of wish God would have told me how much work that would have been. It took me 2.5 years to search between June of 47 right up to December of 89. I found over 350 clippings.
Wow.
Not just local stuff. I mean, there's about 80 clippings that have to do with local stuff. And the rest is like worldwide events and,
yes,
and discussions about UFOs, whether or not they exist. And, you know, even the stupid explanations for them, like light refractions, inversions.
Yeah, panels off whatever it was,
yeah,
causing sparkles in the sky.
Dewdrops on lenses.
Dewdrops on lenses, please.
Yeah. One day you'll have to play the clip about the two UFOs sucking power off the power lines.
Oh, I think if we go real fast, we can play that. Big Daddy, play it.
This is the night that Jimmy Tomasini and myself, we were heading out, and I guess it was about 1:15, and we got parked down at the far end of Maley Drive, and we were ready for our little excursion into the bush. Got the telescope over our shoulder, and the legs, and the weights, binoculars around our neck, and we were just getting off the roadway, and along comes a provincial police car. Pulled over and said, "What are you boys doing here?" Start telling him, "Well, do you believe in UFOs?" This is my personal remark to him right off the bat, and he says, "Why do yous?" And I said, "Oh, yes, we've had a lot of sightings, and we're going out." And I said, "I've got involved with the Air Force at this time. They know who I am. And I'm Don Campbell, and this is my friend Jimmy." And, okay, so that's all right. And I said, "I bowl with Sergeant Lightfoot and also Sergeant Jim Colton of the Sudbury Police." And Sergeant Lightfoot, he said, "Oh, Lightfoot," he says, "he's not one of my bosses, but I know him well. He's down in our headquarters office." So this eased his mind about who I was and who I was talking about. And I even mentioned his wife's name, Audrey, and that he said, "Yes, I know her too, personally." So he knew I wasn't bullying him, you know, that I knew these people. And put him at ease, and I said, "We're going out tonight, hoping that we're going to see some UFOs." And he said, "Well," talked to us for a few more minutes, and he lit up a cigarette, smoked outside his cruiser, and then said, "Good luck, good UFO hunting," and, you know, sort of jokingly, like, much as say, "Well, you might see one or you might not." But he wasn't really convinced, even though he said, "Yes, we've had cruisers," he says, "phone in from Whitby area, in different areas," he says, "patrolling at night, and they've seen strange lights zooming down over the highway." You know, he admitted this. He said, "Yes, some of our boys, I personally," says, "have never seen any."
Yeah, I'm such a tease. That builds up to the story of a couple of UFOs leeching power off the hydro lines, the electricity lines just outside of Sudbury. And the descriptions of that are pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, that clip is 8 minutes long, and,
yeah,
and we've all run out of time. One day we will play some of more of Don Campbell's reminiscences about the UFOs up in his neighborhood. Amazing stuff, Michel. I think we should send a copy of that down to Wendy Connors, too, that stuff.
For sure. Yep.
Of faded discs, because that deserves to be out there as well. Michel, thank you for this. Thank you for your work gathering all of this material together.
Anytime.
And we'll talk to you real soon. I'll put a copy of the program up for you so you can go grab it and play it for yourself and Don, because I know you don't have the old DSL yet.
No, not yet.
No.
But Don will really appreciate this because he doesn't even know that it was on the air tonight. So
okay. Gotta go.
Okay.
Bon nuit, Michel. Good night, Marial. Good night, Victor. Jim Pacheco, Big Daddy Badassiga here in Toronto. We'll talk to you next week and keep your eyes to the skies.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Dean Mastodelli.